Blog Talk Radio.
The motherfucking saga continues.
Yo, yo, what's up, world? It's Badass Thuggin' like I usually do. And you better turn it up, bust some speakers out, cause we off the motherfucking cuff. You dig how we do it? Dog Pound Gangsters 2000 and beyond. Blech.
What's up with it, y'all? Man, don't change that down. This your player partner, the legendary Cocaine. And you tuned in live to Off the Cuff Radio. Better not touch that down. Wait.
Yeah, this is Cassidy, the hustler. And right now, you listening to the Guillotine. Show them the respect they deserve, man. Off the Cut Radio, man. Y'all already know how they doing it, man. I need y'all to stay tuned. They've been doing it for years. So show them the respect they deserve. And you heard it out of bars, mom. Easy.
Keep it moving like this. Yo, this your boy Rampage. You're not rocking with the best. With Off the Cut Radio. Classic. History. Fix your face to all you haters. We off the cuff, baby.
What's up, everybody? This your girl, Bonnie Dollars, the queen of trap, representing Crenshaw, and you are now tuned in with Off the Cuff Radio. What's up?
What's up, y'all? This is Miss Irresistible, giving a shout-out to the live show on Friday nights, Off the Cuff Radio, and I'm live from the 704. Make sure y'all tune in for the blazing hot music.
What it ain't, what it do. Chilly Chill from that original Lynch Mob. Off the Cuff Radio, always where it's at on Friday night. West West, y'all.
Hello? Hello, hello. Hello, this is Animal. Who's there? Hello, hello. Animal. Hello, this is Animal. Hello, hello.
Okay, so we got it. You hear us, bro? Hello?
Yo.
Hey, you hear us?
Hello? Yeah,
hey,
I can hear
us?
You. This Animal. No,
yeah,
this Animal.
I had to switch the phone. What's good, man? I had to switch the phone for a minute. I didn't know what was going on with that.
Oh, man, I was talking to somebody, and all of a sudden it wasn't there no more.
Yeah, I think it was a little audio issue, so I went ahead and switched phones, but we got everything going together, man. Hopefully my co-host will call back shortly, but welcome to Off the Cuff Radio, man. We hope everything is good with you tonight.
Oh, yeah, man. I'm just chilling, man. Just coming from the grocery store, man. It's a fucking nightmare up in there, man.
Oh, man.
No matter what I get, it's always $200-something, man. Groceries, it's very high, man.
That inflation is no joke, man. It's crippling everybody's pockets.
I know, man. The part I can't get is if I spend $200, why I still got to go out and get dinner sometimes. Shit, you know? I guess I'm getting the wrong shit.
Golly, it's everything now, man. It's me. It's not even. Especially if you eating healthy. Man, they still
get
you in
the park. Eating healthy, man. That's when it's really expensive, man. I try to eat healthy, but I do eat junk too, you know.
Yeah, man, it's like, you know, it's what it is too. See, this is what we also talk about off the cuff, man. We talk about a balance of every day, man. Even when we talk about food right now. Even it's like what they doing, they set up the stuff they ain't even good for you.
Yeah, you're right.
The stuff they want you to live long. They charge you an arm and a leg.
It's all
for it,
bad for you. Yeah, it's all bad for you. And I love hamburgers and french fries. That's my worst enemy.
Yeah, man. Evelyn, that's the addiction right there.
Yeah, it is. Don't forget about the pizza, man. I got to have some pizza once a month.
What's crazy, man, is that I actually went ahead. I had to change that whole diet around the time where we were going through the pandemic, because I started, you know, doing a little research and started finding out that a lot of that food wasn't really good. And plus, I started feeling bad eating it. So I was like, okay, I got to make a change.
It's all those chemicals they put in food nowadays, man. Trying to grow it bigger and faster. That's what's killing us, man. And everybody wanted to know why my grandparents lived deep into the 80s and 90s. Because I'd say they weren't eating processed food. It was all natural.
And you know there's an old saying, too. They say they also contaminating that water, too, man. That's why you got people's behavior habitats acting up. It's wild out here.
I be looking for that 50 cent water, man. 50 cent got good water.
Yeah. We look for that natural stuff now, but you know you gotta go through almost the country to get that natural stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Oh man, I was raised on well water, man. I'm from Alabama, man. That's all we had was well water, good stuff.
You ain't never had no well water, huh?
What's going on, y'all? What's going on? I'm here, Animal. How you doing,
what's
man?
Up, man?
Gentlemen, what part of Alabama are you from? Bessemer, Mobile, Rainbow City?
I'm from Montgomery, man.
Oh boy.
Okay.
Deep the deep south.
Okay. No. War Eagle, or Roll Tide.
Man, you know it's got to be the War Eagle style. Man,
go
Auburn. Because I follow Charles Barkley, man.
Jackson, Frank Thomas.
I follow Dick Hurt. And I follow, Cam Newton, anybody from Auburn, man. I always follow him all these years, man, you know. But when Alabama is not playing Auburn, I do root for him, though, man, because I'm from Alabama. But my heart, man, is Auburn all the way, man. And that's a big day in my neighborhood. Everybody be barbecuing, man. Alabama against Auburn. Boy, it gets crazy sometimes, man. Everybody got the grills going, drinking, having a good old time, man.
That's what it is, man. And
I also went to Bama State, too, man. I graduated from Bama State, man, in 82.
That's what's up. Hey, T-Max, you there?
I think he's gone.
He's going to call back a little bit. A little phone issues, man, we got going on. But we get
this
together,
man,
right
that's
now.
Happening
we get this, yeah, we get this. It's hip-hop, man. You know, sometimes that happens, man. But you telling us about Alabama, man. Tell us about what it was like, man, just growing up in Alabama during that time period.
Well, man, you know, I raised in the 60s and 70s back there, man. You know, it was like 50-50, man. Half the white folks loved us and half the white folks hated us, man. So you had to, you know, wiggle out between the two. And I dated white women because they told me I couldn't have one, so I was a big problem. I was a big problem, but I was a big nigga, mean as hell, playing football, man. You know, shit. You know, so they didn't really want to fuck with me. When I got good in football, they kind of left me alone because I won them a championship, man, in 78. And we went to the championship in 79, but we lost by 2 points. So they'll never forget that. I'm the first guy to win a scholarship from my high school. So, you know, I'm legend back there, man. So they kind of left me alone with the white girls.
You know. Yeah, because at the time too, you was also putting the state on your back. So that's like, okay, he's a blue potential blue chipper. So we don't want to make him too mad.
Oh no, not too mad. I was treated bad by a bunch of white folks, and I was treated good by a bunch of white folks. So it's kind of like even, you know.
Right.
And then when we did farm work, you could work for money or half of what you do. You pick 4 hampers of butter beans, you can take 2 or get paid for 2, you know, or get paid for 4 like that, you know. So, you know, it was kind of cool with that part.
And then looking at Alabama, because I'm pretty sure you go back to your hometown from time to time, do you see like a difference within race relations, or do you see a difference between how it was back then
now?
Like,
man.
Do you see any improvement?
There's so many white boys dating black girls back there now, and it's vice versa, man. All the black guys, most black guys got white girls now, you know. You couldn't do that when I was growing up back then. You was a tough guy, man. They start easing up in 99, and now in 1990, they start easing up. But from 90 on back, man, you know, you have to be a tough guy to date a white girl. And
exactly.
You wasn't a tough guy. You definitely wound up missing.
Yeah, and on top of that, not to mention you had to have those accolades in a way. That's why probably, like, the Bo Jacksons and the Barclays probably got away with it. They were like, okay.
Yeah,
like
they was
it.
Good in sports. Yeah, they was
we
good
don't
in
like
sports
it.
And stuff, man.
They like,
yeah.
We don't like it.
Then the
but
big,
at the same
then
time.
The big hurt. Yeah, then the big hurt came along with baseball. Then Cam Newton came along. So, you know. But,
yeah,
you know, I miss Alabama. You know, I get homesick, but it's just too slow for me, man. I messed around and went hunting one day and got lost. And I saw them big, bright lights busting through the trees. I followed my way to the bright light and found the city and never went back. Damn, this is what they told me. Don't go in the woods. You might get lost. Shit, all right. I found the big-ass city out there in the middle of the woods.
Especially when you go in them dark roads. Especially when you go with them dark roads, man, you don't know if you're going to come back.
Yeah,
it's like,
man,
going through a black hole.
You got that right, man. Some of our roads don't even have asphalt yet. Dirt roads still, man. All these years, still dirt roads, man.
But the race relation is improved,
maybe.
But the conditioning has definitely got to still improve. Because, you know, they still got a lot of things.
Yeah, you know, they got, it ain't too much farm work down there now because I used to haul hay. Now they got a machine that rolls it up and you take a tractor and pick it up with a forklift. Now, it ain't baled no more, it's rolled. So you can't, so they changed that around and stuff. And you don't pick a whole cotton no more. They got a cotton gin now, we don't do that. I did cotton from set from 68 to 73 when I did cotton.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. And
that's
and true. Also we picked corn and shit, man, you know. Then we did the peanuts. You know, and most of our meat, we hunted it down and stuff, man. When we got beef, man, we thought we was eating high on the hog, man.
Man, we go tell out y'all something,
some,
man.
Go out and kill some venison, coons, possums, rabbits, squirrels, all that shit. But I don't eat that shit no more, man. I can't eat Bambi no more, man. Yeah, I can't believe I used to eat Bambi, but it was just a way of life, man.
Well, that was the survival act. That was survival tactics
and,
at the time.
And we did a lot of fishing too. Yeah, we did a lot of fishing.
That was considered the survival tactics at the time, you know. I mean, you had to get how
you
live.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah, it was how you live, man. You know. You really didn't how to know who to trust and nothing like that, you know. You do some stuff, you know, and then it get back, you know, ain't nobody told it but the white man because he was the only one with you. So you have to deal with stuff like that. Who can you trust? But like me,
wow.
one of my best friends was a white dude and his father, he was high ranked in something because when I became friends with him, it was like a get out of jail card free, man. You know?
You had him in your back pocket, right?
I'm serious, man. I was downtown drunk as hell, got pulled over, didn't have no license. I said, I'm Baron Hopper's best friend. You know his daddy, Buddy Hopper? They're like, get your ass home. Don't let us catch you down here no more. You know, like that, man. I never knew what kind of power he had, but he sure had power when you used his name. And I was best friends with his son.
Hey, check this, man. You always got to have one in your back pocket for survival purposes.
Oh, yeah, always. He was a tough white boy, too, man. He wasn't no slouch. His nickname was Bull. He looked like a big-ass bull.
And with that, with guys like that, see, they'll fight in the ball for you. You know, you always got
to
have something
man,
in the back pocket.
He used to take me in clubs that blacks couldn't even go in. He dared any white dude to fuck with me.
Dang.
Yeah, man, he used to tell me, I said, man, you know, blacks can't go in there. You with me. Come on, you going. I like, all right, man, shit. I remember one time a white girl come up and touch me just to see was I real. I can't believe you in here. You is real. Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man. And you doing it and you playing football, man. What position did you play in playing football?
Oh, man, I played defensive tackle and offensive tackle. I went to college playing offensive tackle because I could pull real good and knock them linebackers out coming across the green. I was deadly on their ass, you know. But then when I got to college, I was so big and quick, they moved me to defense, and I started playing defensive tackle, man.
Yeah, you went, and then afterwards, did you try to go up for the NFL afterwards?
I went over to Atlanta training camp, man. I didn't make it, man, because I had surgery, and I was having pain from my surgery, man, and I got cut the first week, but I did trial, man. If I wouldn't have had surgery, man, I'd have made it to pro. I already know that, but it is what it is.
Understood.
Yeah.
When you look at the time you played, what was it like in terms of that college experience, and what would you tell players today about what it takes to make it at the pro level?
Well, what it takes to make it to the pro level back then, let me see. I don't know if you, my roommate Curtis Green, he went to the Detroit Lions second round in 81, and we was a SWAC football team, man. And it's hard
Southwestern
to go to
athletic,
pro from
yeah.
the SWAC, man. Like Richard Dent, he made it. He was from Tennessee State. And one of my frat brothers made it. He played with Pittsburgh Steelers, man. He was from Alabama A&M. I'm trying to say, what was his number, 88 or 87?
Yeah.
Back in the day. He was my frat brother.
Okay, but yeah, Animal, I mean, when you look at all those guys in terms of the SWAC, when you look at the black HBCUs, I mean, you look at the greats like Walter Payton, Mississippi Valley,
yeah.
Walter Payton, you know, Jerry Rice, Deacon Jones,
oh, yeah.
I think.
Jerry Rice.
I played yeah.
1 year against Jerry Rice, man.
Was he as good as that? Was he an Animal at college, man?
Jerry Rice. I played 1 year against what's his name from Grambling, first black quarterback to win the Super Bowl,
Doug Williams.
Yeah, man, I played 1 year against him in 79, and shit. He went up in 80, and Curtis Green went up in 81. But, yeah, man, it's hard to make it. Plus, academics, man, they wasn't too hard on our academics back then, but they are now, man. You almost got to be a damn rocket scientist to play football now. But back when I was playing, if you was good, they would even put you with teachers that would give you grades, but you didn't hear that from me. Yeah.
We know how it
goes. Yeah, if you was good, they would keep you on the team. Yeah, and then they would have these girls do your homework and shit for you.
Yeah,
I went through all of that shit. But, you know, I wasn't no dummy, man. I got my books and shit, man. But I did slack up a little bit when I found out I could get away with a lot of shit, you know. Especially when we have a road trip. Especially when we have a road trip, man. You know, we leave, like, on a Thursday and don't get back to, like, Saturday night late or Sunday morning early, man. It all depends on where we was going.
Understood. What would you tell the athletes today in terms of understanding how to have that backup plan in terms of getting your degree or at least learning as much as you can in school just in case the pros don't work out?
Yeah, the main thing is you have to stay focused on them books, man, because football ain't promised to everybody. And like now, I couldn't even play football because of the rules, man. But when I was playing football, you could clothesline a motherfucker. You can't even do that now. And a quarterback.
Horse collar, all that.
Man, your ass was missed me if you was a quarterback, dog. We would try to put you under the hospital, not in it, under it. You can't do that now. So it's all protected now and stuff, you know. And if you got an attitude with that, going to pro, you got to get rid of it, man, or you find yourself back at home working in the grocery store, man, if you ain't get that education. So a lot of guys say, I ain't worried about no education. I'm going to pro. I have money and this and that.
But
when you get up there and can't deal with those rules, man, you get pushed down and you got to regroup and think about what you're doing. Because it ain't like the old days, man. I'm telling you, man, like, you ain't got no books learning, man. It's hard to play pro football nowadays, man, because now they don't want you to know your position. They want you to know everybody's position.
Man, look.
You got to replay somebody or whatever. Yeah, if I play defensive tackle, I got to be able to play defensive guard on both sides of the field. I got to know what they do on every play. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's part of it. I mean, that's part of it.
Yeah, that's part of it now.
Yeah, the closest I got was just recreation in high school when we play outside in gym. But, but when you look at the lines in terms of your formations, you know, your center, he's the quarterback of the line because he has to, you know, on offense, he has to read what the defense is going to do and get, you know, make sure those traps full, make sure all those guys are in position.
Yeah,
got to
make sure all
you
of
know,
that,
if you're a cornerback, you know, you could be out there on an island, you know, where you literally have to anticipate where the receiver is. Your safety comes over top and help, depending whether you're in cover two, cover three, cover one. But you got to be able to read and anticipate. You know, you got
to
know whether
you
can blitz the quarterback or not.
It's a complex game to play. Yeah, when you get double teamed, if you're a defensive lineman, when you get double teamed, you got to know how to read. Reset your feet, regroup. It's called regroup, reset. You know, if you don't know how to do that, you get double blocked every time. And they wasn't teaching that back then. You have to learn that kind of stuff on your own. But now they teach that. How to get out of double.
I think what they did too.
Block, tackle.
I think what they did, too, was they made the NFL more quarterback-based because so they could sell tickets. Because back in the day when you guys was probably playing, everything was more so based off defense. You going back to the 85 Bears.
Yeah.
The defense was like the market.
Yeah.
But after that,
the
quarterback started being the market.
You know, Terry Bradshaw changed all of that, though.
Came coming from Louisiana Tech.
Terry Bradshaw changed all of that. Lynn Swann, all those guys.
Jack Youngblood.
Yeah,
man.
You know,
Franco Harris,
know.
That whole Steelers squad.
Yeah, Franco Harris. Mean Joe Green.
LC Greenwood,
Jack Lambert.
Anybody look on YouTube and look at those old VHS NFL tapes, man. They used to put niggas in the dirt.
You got that right. I used to run and grab a running back from the back and then twist and just dump him over my head and smash him. You do that now, you get kicked out of the game and fine. You can't do that no more. I'm telling you, I really can't play football now, man, because of the rules. I get a penalty every game, man. I'm serious. I probably would.
Man, look, when you look at some of them hitters in the game, you know, like Ronnie Lott, Chuck Cecil.
Oh, yeah, man.
Man, I mean, of course, Jack Tatum, the assassin.
I got a question for you, man. They say they say Tom Brady is the greatest of all time. He's the GOAT, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think so, man. I think it's Terry Bradshaw, man. I think Terry Bradshaw, even though Brady got more championships than Terry Bradshaw, but Terry Bradshaw came up when they throwed you down. He got punched in the ribs about four or five times before he got up. Terry Bradshaw have thrown a touchdown with a finger in his eye. Then got fingered in the eye and still threw a touchdown, you know. Brady can't do no shit like that, man. You know what I'm saying? And Tom and Bradshaw get back up. Let's do it again. You know, shit. When you think of it that way, I think Terry Bradshaw is the greatest of all time. He got four championships and Brady got seven. But you know, that's just my opinion. That's all.
But, you know, when we look at it from what you're saying, Animal, from when you think about the era that they played in, it was definitely the metrics are different when we look at it now because we see the level of brutality that the game had back then. And we're not saying this being anti-football. When you watch some of those old videos, like King said, they was getting laid down. I mean, that was a hard game to play.
Man.
So you had to be a tough guy.
I had this friend I played with. Now his name was Lorenzo Lee Lilly. We called him Big Nook. He was one of the captains of the football team. Real mean. Like if it's like fourth and like two or something, whoever's in front of him would spit in his face because they know he was going to jump outside. They were spitting Big Nook face. Big Nook would jump outside, hitting and fighting. They'll find him 15 yards and a first down, man. They would do it to him every time he just got around. That spitting number 76 face when you short for yards and you would get a first down every time. Yeah, so, but you can't spit in nobody's face now, man.
Man, look, we still remember that situation back in the day when Bill
spit in somebody's face. You could stick them in the eyes and shit, you know.
You're talking about spitting somebody's face. I remember when Bill Romanowski spit in J.J. Stokes' face back in the day in the game.
Oh, yeah.
I remember LT broke off. Was it LT that broke on
Joe
Theismann?
Yeah. Monday Night Football. I think it was in 1983. I think it was 83 or 84 that happened.
And he had the rub, rubble tussle on his leg and come out a couple weeks later.
Yeah, LT to me is the greatest linebacker of all times. Myself,
even better than Ray Lewis.
They had to change the game of football for him, man. But Ray Lewis came on after him. But I'm telling you, LT, man, they had to change the game on how to block that dude, man.
A coked up Lawrence Taylor is a scary man.
You got that right. Lawrence Taylor and his coach. Yeah.
So when we look at that era,
I didn't mess with cocaine, man, till I came out here, man. I had my fun with it, you know. I snorted for 2 years and smoked for 3.
So what was it like in terms of how you found your way out there?
You're breaking up. I can't hear you. What'd you say?
I said, how'd it come to that you found your way out to California making your way out there?
Oh, man. I was getting in trouble and stuff, man. You know, I was running with a gang, doing stuff, breaking into shit. You know, it's caught up with me. And, I always wanted to do porn and shit, and if you had in Alabama, you know, it was always soft porn. If you got a porn tape, it's when you can see penetration, 9 times out of 10, it came from me and my brother. But anyway, I got into it with my landlord one time. I had like 5 VCRs set up to one master VCR, recording 5 movies at one time. And we were selling that shit, man, for $40, man. I was making almost $2,500 a week just selling porn, dog.
You were doing it at a time where technically, because porn didn't become legal until 1988. So pretty much.
I was doing it in 82, 83, 84,
85.
Oh, Lord.
Then they got behind me in 86, and then I had to leave in 87, man. Yeah, I had to leave in 87, man. They was really trying to catch up with me. So it was either California or North Carolina. My favorite uncle lived in North Carolina, and I thought about going there. And then my brother said, no, let's go to the West Coast and check that out first and stuff, man. So I came out to California to be a cartoon animator and a chef. So I can cook real good, and I can draw almost anything. You sit there and visualize it. You write it on a piece of paper. I can read it and draw it. You got a story you need. You need storyboards, too. I can read your story and put pictures to it. You know, I'm good at shit like that, man. I'm very creative. I'm also a fashion designer, red carpet clothes. But everybody we fuck with, man, is very jealous of us, man. They don't want me and my brother to come out, man, because they say if we come out, they ain't going to sell shit, you know, like that. And it's like, if you help us, you think we just going to leave you behind? But that's what they think, man. And we just that good, man. We are just that good. But my size was my curse, man. See, like, I was like, 320, 315, something like that. I really wasn't pumping iron too much. But every time I go out with my friends would get rushed for autographs, and it was like, why are you rushing me for autographs? Oh, you with a bodyguard? We looking for the bodyguard, and they talking about my big ass. You know what I'm saying? So my friends always wanted me to go out with them to make them look famous and shit, man. So I looked into it, man, and 33 years later, here I am. Got nothing but old kind of crazy-ass stories to tell, all this kind of shit I've been through, man. I'm lucky to be alive, survived all that crazy shit, man. You ever heard of the story between Ruthless and Death Row?
Yeah.
Oh,
I'm from Ruthless, nigga. Shit.
Look, man,
yes,
well,
sir.
We got no time on the show to talk about all them stories. We know. Boy.
Yep.
We got a lot of them.
But we want to hear, because you know, you being a bodyguard, but you being a bodyguard, because you're the first bodyguard we ever had on the show. And this is a special honor for us. So, you know, hearing these stories from a bodyguard perspective is giving us an interesting insight.
Okay.
So
hold on 1 minute, guys. I smoke weed, man. I got to take a couple of hits, man. That's all right with y'all?
It's all good.
Yeah.
It's all
so
good,
when you look
man.
At it, Animal, how'd you find your way into the bodyguard game in terms of what did you learn? In terms of how'd you get in first, and then what did you learn as you went along doing it? Because you came along the time in the 80s in L.A. Ooh, gang.
Say that again.
I said, so what was it like in terms of you? It's all good. So what was it like in terms of your foray into bodyguard work during that time in L.A., especially during the crazy 80s when the gang shit was, like, super heavy, and then you actually being the bodyguard for one of the biggest things in the game.
It was all crazy, man, because I started, you know, I would walk in a club and shit. People asked me where the bathroom at. I'm like, why the hell you ask me where the bathroom at? Oh, we thought you was the bouncer. We sorry. Then I walk in nightclubs. All the managers would rush me, ask me, are you working somewhere? You need a job, looking for work. You know, it was just my calling, man, my size, the way I looked, the way I carried myself and shit. And I found out I was in high demands, but I just started. I said, if I'm going to do this shit, I got to be the best at it. So I started back kickboxing, and I started WWF training, and I mixed kickboxing with WWF training, which made me have my own style of fighting. And I pumped iron like a madman. I would go to the gym. I was pumping iron 4 or 5 hours a day, man. I did that shit for 5 years, man, from 1990 to 95. 95, I was the strongest dude in Hollywood, man. I was benching 6 wheels and a half, man. And then we started bouncing, getting a little reputation, name for yourself and stuff. And Eazy-E heard about us. He was looking for some bodyguards to stop Suge from running up in his record label, taking over and shit, man. And I fit the bill, me and some other big niggas, man. We went there and stopped all that shit, man.
Oh, man. Yeah,
yeah.
So in particular, because I heard one story that Eazy-E was involved with when he was performing. And they had, like, almost a riot, like, some type of riot. Because our friend Gonzo, I think, told some similar story like this. Rest in peace. But then, what was, like, some of the wildest memories that you had being on the road with Eazy?
Some of the wildest shit that I've had on the road with Eazy?
Yeah.
Some of the wildest shit, man. I guess it would be when we went to New York. And we ran up on this kid playing this song called Fuck Compton by this nigga called Tim Dog. And Eazy heard that shit, and he flipped out, man. He had us go to that fool neighborhood. We was looking for him and anybody that rolled with him. Eazy said, I ain't want to fight him. I just want to talk to this nigga. So we jacked a lot of niggas in his neighborhood, man, you know, looking for his ass. But he had came out here to L.A., and we was looking for him in New York, but he was out here in L.A. hiding out. So I guess that's a good way to hide out. You do some shit, you hide out, and they count, and they won't think you there, huh? So we found out where he lived at through a porn star. We found out where he lived at through a porn star named Spontaneous. That was her name, Spontaneous. He was trying to do some music with her. She was trying to be a rapper. And I was rolling with Busy Bone. And that's how we found out where he was through him and stuff. That was kind of crazy. And then another crazy thing that we did, like, he signed this group called Brownside.
and they invited us to a video shoot, and we went over there and stuff, and this one kid just wanted to meet Easy so bad, and then everybody was telling him to chill out, man. He wound up getting shot and shit, man. And then everybody just started busting and shit, man. We grabbed Easy and swooped him to the car and shit, man, you know. And that was a crazy time. And then we said, another crazy time, we went to a show. And me, Big Mike, and the Tobio twins were with Easy. And they wouldn't let Easy go left, right, north, south, east, or west. Just had him all bundled up. Man, we start swinging on 1,000 motherfuckers, dog. Four motherfuckers swinging on 1,000 motherfuckers. We was hitting women, dudes, every damn body. He want to go. We be ready to go, motherfucker. We just start swinging on the whole damn crowd, man, just knocking motherfuckers
back.
And shit. Motherfuckers got the fuck out the way, dog. Yeah, that's one crazy story, man, but I can't say where it was, you know.
Understood. Look, you were talking about spontaneous ecstasy back in the day. With her, with all them tattoos, real ones know about her. I mean, whoa, you took it way back with her.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, Brownside, that was who Toker was with, right? Rest in peace. Toker
yeah,
was with them.
Toker,
that was
man. Yeah, Toker got murdered, man, in 2018,
yeah, well,
man.
Yeah, when he was in Mexico, I believe. He was in Mexico when he
yeah,
got killed.
Yeah, Toker is a Mexican. He's from that street gang, 13th Street.
You mean 18th
yeah,
Street?
Yeah, and all of them was down with Easy, man. You know, all of them loved Easy. They even got a you heard of the song Boys in the Hood, haven't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
I bet you ain't never heard of Vatos in the Hood, have you?
No, we never heard that one.
I got
never
it right
heard
here at the house. Brownside did it. Bato's in the Hood. Sounds just like fucking Boys in the Hood, but it's in
Mexican.
Spanish and English, man.
But it's wild,
yeah,
though, because Bato's I actually got an old Source magazine.
I tell you what, man, you invite me back to the show, man. I'll find it and play it for you, man. I'm doing a little talk show myself called Animalistic Pastime, Home for the Sick, talking about the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I'm going to play it on my radio, on my little Instagram show, man.
Okay.
Sweet.
Man, look, we're already invited.
We definitely in for it, man.
Bato's in the hood, but I'll let y'all hear it before I do my show, though, man, you know. Yeah, it's badass, man. People don't realize
how beloved that Easy was, man. I want to ask you this particular because we ask a lot of people that were down in that period about this, about the movie Straight Outta Compton. And do you feel that he was portrayed accurately?
Man, I'm gonna tell you something. I watched Straight Outta Compton twice. I watched it the first time in shock. I watched it the second time to make sure I would never watch it again, man. It's like 90% of that shit didn't even happen, man. And the only thing that's fucked up about it is a real good movie. It's a real good movie, but none of that shit true, man. None of it. Do you think them niggas would have beat Eazy-E up in the studio and then that was just it? Do you really think that, man?
No.
You don't know us very well, dog. Man, them niggas
Eli,
would have put their hands on Eazy-E like that, it'd have been dead motherfuckers everywhere, dog. It didn't happen like that, man.
And one thing about it too, Animal, is that, you know, from people we've talked to off air about it, and even us out here in, you know, Virginia and North Carolina respectively, we knew that situation because we knew a lot of it. It was fabricated. Like, one thing about, because, I mean, you're talking about the height of the 80s, Mob Piru and Kelly Park, and like you said, they're going to jump Easy like that, and there ain't going to be no retaliation. I'm like, and this,
man,
I'm like,
dude,
nah.
I'm going to tell you, what really happened was Dr. Dre, man, really hurt Easy really bad, man, because Dr. Dre spoke to Kane to work at Ruthless on the 3rd, and he didn't show up, and then on the 5th,
Easy calling him like, what's up? And he was like, man, I'm still not happy with my contract. He said, let's talk about it. So he said, well, come by the studio and let's talk about it. So, you know, Easy go by the studio. He didn't even take us with him because he said he's just going to see Jay. He get over to the studio, man, and Stu go over there with three or four motherfuckers, man, with bats threatening his life to sign. He signed Dr. Dre over to him. And he said he signed him over, but he signed Mickey Mouse on everything, and he signed it all that shit with his left hands and shit, man. Because they was poking him with the bat, you know, and they said, Easy, what did you do? He said, I signed him over. What the fuck would you do? Niggas got bats threatening to beat your fucking brains on and shit. And he was really hurt, man. So Dr. Dre set me up, man. Why my nigga do me like that, man? Them niggas could have killed me over there, you know? And so he put $100,000 hit out on Suge for that shit, man. And we was like, well, you get that 100 G's, man. That's the fuck this shit, you know? But Mike Klein told Easy, look, man, let that nigga go. I'm going to show you how to get paid. So Mike Klein knew all that paperwork shit. And
he told Easy,
look, you don't want nobody on your label that don't want to be here. He's not going to give you his best work. He's going to always give you some bullshit until he leaves. So you might as well let him go, and I'll show you how to get paid. And that's when Eazy-E say, all you niggas talk about is spraying me, but your motherfucker still is paying me. You know, like that. He was getting 40% of the chronic, man. 40% man. And then they're going to say Eazy-E was broke when he died. Eazy-E was worth $35 million when he died, man.
Yeah, I knew that crap right there. But they was making like Eazy was a struggling rapper. I'm like, yo, Eazy was balling. He didn't
have a
$40 million distribution deal.
Yeah, man, Eazy-E was getting ready to play his music over on 60 radio stations all over the United States, man. He had it lined up to play his music, man, but it never happened because he died and shit, man. Easy was into all to that new technology shit, man, you know. He had a video game coming out and all that shit, man. None of it never made it out, man.
Did you know anything, Joe? Did you know anything, Animal, about the situation with Easy with HIV prior to his passing? Was there any signs of it?
Man, I'm going to tell you like this here. In the history of AIDS, Easy is the only nigga died with AIDS the way he died. You don't die with AIDS the way Easy died with AIDS, man. Easy was a healthy nigga. Last time we kicked with Easy, he was in New York. He was wrestling with Bone like he always do. He always wrestled with them niggas, having fun with Bone and shit, man, you know. So I see y'all when y'all get back to L.A. and I got some new tracks for y'all niggas to spit some venom on and all that shit. Then next thing we hear, he in the hospital before we could get back to L.A. and shit, man. And all of a sudden, this nigga in a coma. Next thing you know, he dead. Healthy as hell. You don't die with AIDS like that, man. You just don't. Now, I done researched it. I don't know no other nigga, woman, or anybody dying with AIDS like Easy did, man. You don't be healthy like that.
Yeah,
somebody shot him up with that shit in the hospital. That's what we always said.
Real, man, because we were looking at it like, man, that's a shocker right there, because we didn't see no signs of him being sick.
No, man, wasn't no sign. Only sign he had pneumonia, coughing and stuff, and they was treating him for pneumonia and shit. They didn't find out he had AIDS and shit, so he was in a coma. Easy didn't even know he had AIDS, but they said he did, but no, Easy was in a coma when they found out he had AIDS, and he never came out of the coma and shit, man. Because he thought he had pneumonia. Yeah.
Yeah, now I want to ask you this, too. Now, were you also with him in New York when him and Q was supposed to piece it up in the tunnel?
Yeah. I was in there, and that was bullshit. That was bullshit, too, man. In the movie, they had Eazy-E walk up to Ice Cube, but in real life, Ice Cube walked up to Eazy. How I know? I was standing right there. Because the Tobio twins spotting it. Yo, man, ain't that nigga Cube right there? They was like, yeah, man, look like he's coming this way. So we start getting up, thought he had niggas with him, wanted to do some shit. Eazy was like, no, let that nigga come over here and see what he got to say. So he came over, man. He said, what's up, Eric? He didn't even call him Eazy. He called him Eric. He said, what's up, Eric? Man, I
Can I holler at you for a minute? The Easy was like, yo, man, sit down, man, you know? And so they just start chopping it up, man. About the old day, the club closed up at 2 in the morning because they served alcohol, but the owner of the club left the club open to 5 in the morning, let them niggas stay in there talking, chopping it up, man. But I had to take Busy Bone back to the hotel because he was throwing up all over the club, putting napkins over his dick so Easy told me to get Busy Bone back to the fucking hotel and shit before he passed out. So I didn't stay there during the whole thing, but the Tobio Twins did, and they told me, man, him and Easy chopped it up. They was going to do another NWA album and shit, you know, and he said him and Dre was pretty cool and stuff, and so we're going to try to work this shit out, man. But they never worked it out and stuff. And in the movie, they had him working on the NWA album, and Easy-E fell out in the studio. That never happened, man. Easy-E fell out at his house in Norwalk, man. They never even started on the new NWA album. Never did,
yeah.
But in the movie they did. So that's all bullshit too.
Ah, man, you know to me the and this, you mean you know T Mask is going, you know where I'm going with this. The biggest gap to me was we, you know, where they had Dr. Dre going out there being Mike Dr. Dre Tyson, just stalking everybody.
Say that again?
T-Mac, know where I'm going with this one about the movie. When
yeah.
Dr. Dre became Mike Tyson up there.
Yeah, just start punching out random Piru niggas and whatnot.
Oh, hell no, man. Hell no. Man, that shit didn't happen like that, dog, man. Shit, I'm going to tell you something, man. You know, like when that one part when in the movie he's talking about, I got Tupac in the back and you niggas up here tripping and blah, blah, this and that, clowning and all this shit. You know, that's it. Man, did you know Suge would have slapped that nigga down if he'd have said some shit like that in front of his niggas, man? Because Suge can't show weakness in front of his niggas because somebody talks shit to Suge and them niggas see that like, damn, he talks shit to Suge. I might can talk shit to Suge. Man, ain't nobody talks shit to Suge like that. Suge would have slapped that nigga down and had some of his homies post him up, dog. I'm telling you, I know what kind of nigga Suge was, man. Yeah, so you know, he ain't really got no street credit because you don't know if you ever seen Easy do that album cover with Dr. Dre with sequins clothes on when he was with the L.A. Wrecking Crew and shit, man. But you know, but me and Dr. Dre though, me and him cool though, man. You know, I won't throw his ass under the bus, man. But you know, me and him real cool, man. You know.
Yeah.
But back in the day, man. I was on Easy-E's side. It didn't matter, man. You wasn't with Easy, you was against us, man. So, you know.
Yeah, especially though, there was one that you alluded to this earlier that you said that they tried to. There was another story that I heard that they tried to pull up on Rufus Studios with the static. And, you know, I think you guys backed them down. Did that really happen?
Yeah, man, some niggas came up on the studio, man, trying to just bust up in there on the session and shit, man. Them niggas didn't know how deep we was, man. But see, Big Rob, he was one of the niggas that came to Ruthless with me. He was a shot caller for 4-1 and Western and shit. That's the hood I'm from, 4-1 and Western and shit. And when Big Rob show up, man, with 300 niggas and 200 bitches, dog. Man, you didn't want to fuck with Easy, man. Easy, man, got niggas coming out the woodwork, dog. And then they ran up on that shit that night, man. You know, shit got kind of crazy, man. And,
Yeah, but my memory is, I think they was playing a diss record to Death Row. I think it was the What Would You Do record or something like that. And Suge probably got mad because they playing records, dissing them, and he's like, "Nah, play. We gonna play it anyway. We gonna." And he was, you know, shooting the threats and all that.
Yeah. You know, man, he had like two or three diss songs that y'all ain't never heard. They never came out. I don't know what happened to those songs. Yeah, there's some Eazy-E music that's missing, man, and nobody knows where it's at. They talk about it a lot on certain shows. It says a briefcase somewhere with Eazy-E music in it, and nobody knows who got it.
I remember, too, Howard Stern, they was talking about, they said Easy had, like, $30 million buried in his backyard or something crazy like that. I kind of believe it because, I believe it, though, because, like I said earlier, Easy signed, like, a big distribution deal with Relativity, and that was major at the time.
I remember one time Easy sent me to his closet to get some shoes, and on the top shelf was all mason jars full of hundreds. Nothing but mason jars full of $100 bills. It's probably about 10,000 in each jar, man.
And see,
I didn't say nothing. I act like I didn't see it. I just brought him his tennis shoes. He didn't ask me, did I see it? He didn't ask me, did I grab one or anything, you know? I just didn't say anything, but yeah, man, Easy had plenty of paper, but I don't know about no money buried in the backyard and shit, though. That sounds like some shit a country nigga would do.
But you know what's a trip, though, man? It's like, everybody hears a lot of things about it. Like, what would you feel is, like, the biggest misconception that people have about Easy?
I would say that, I guess how he died, man, you know, because people like Easy are supposed to die in a hell of bullets or old age, you know what I mean? And he died with AIDS. He didn't die like Tupac and Biggie, because you notice most niggas, all they say is Biggie and Tupac, Tupac and Biggie. They don't never put Easy in there, man, because he died with AIDS. He didn't die in a hell of bullets, man. And I don't think that's right, man, because Easy is the godfather of gangster rap. And it wouldn't be no gangster rap if it wasn't for Eazy-E and Public Enemy, those kind of niggas, man. And I don't know if y'all seen the 50th anniversary of hip-hop on BET, man. That shit was so fucking whack, man, you know. That's my personal opinion about it. The reason why it was whack, they ain't had nobody from the West Coast representing, man. How can you do 50 years of hip-hop and don't have Dr. Dre and Ice Cube there giving a tribute to Easy motherfucking E? How come you ain't got DJ Quick there, man? DJ Quick pioneering shit, man. You know? You didn't have, and Snoop Dogg. You didn't even have Snoop Dogg there, man. How can you do 50 years of hip-hop without having Snoop Dogg up in that motherfucker, man? The only ones that they had representing us was E-40, and they only gave him 40 seconds and shit, man. You know, I was like, damn.
They kept the minimum to his number.
Yeah, man, you get ready to get into E-40, and all of a sudden he's gone. Like, that's me. Yeah, you know. And I think, I'm not sure, but I think I seen Too Short. I don't remember him performing. And that was it. I can't think of another nigga from the West Coast that was representing nothing for hip-hop for the 50th year anniversary, man. And I thought that was really fucked up, man, you know? That was really fucked up to not have those guys involved, you know?
Yeah, I think, going back to what you were saying, see, this is where I see that they wanted to focus more on Pac and Big because they went out Hollywood style, you know, like assassination style.
Yeah.
They wanted to now, like, it was very, like, Hollywood style the way they went out. And that leads on to a lot of conspiracy.
Yeah,
well, you know, it's always
right
for the dramatic license. Yeah, they always, one thing about Hollywood, and like y'all were saying with the movie, because we knew a lot of that stuff didn't happen. Even in the 90s, before social media really became a thing, you would have heard stuff about that. But when you're talking about a movie, and this is why we're happy to have you on the show, because we want somebody who was there who can really give a detailed and accurate account of what happened during that time. And people like you, Animal, are important. You know, you were very important because you're one of the historians of this. You were there, so you understood
what
the climate was.
And I hear so many niggas telling lies and shit. Now, listen, that shit didn't happen like that, you know? Yeah, but this one guy, that he was telling a story which was true, But he had his time confused. His name was Mob James. He rolled with Suge. Badass, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Kill your ass quick as you can open up your eyes. He'll put your eyes out. He one of them kind of niggas, man, you know. And he used to run up in Ruthless with Suge setting that shit down, man. And everybody thought that was me and my crew. So I had to go on a couple of shows and straighten that out. And what I told him was, I say, Mob James is not lying. He did run up in Ruthless with Suge, taking over the record label, doing whatever the fuck they wanted to do, scaring the hell out of everybody. But it wasn't us. That was the crew that they fired. Those niggas were scared of Suge. Me and my crew wasn't scared of nobody. We want to fight niggas. Come on and bring it, you know, like that. And then I said, when Suge ran up in there and we ran him up out of there, Mob James wasn't with him because he would have remembered us, because he'd be saying, we came up the Ruthless one day to do some shit, and he's had some niggas up there that ran us up out of there. He ain't telling no story like that, so he couldn't have ran up on us, you know what I mean? So we was new crew. They got rid of them niggas that they was punking and hired us and shit, man, and we stopped all that shit, man.
Because we've heard some stories about Mob, you know, Animal, and the thing is, we really wanted to know, and I mean, you gave, you know, a lot of people have said a lot, but we are getting it from somebody who was there. So Mob really was with the shit like that.
Yeah, man, he ain't lying about that. They was definitely running up in Ruthless doing whatever the fuck they want, but it wasn't us, though, dog. That's how we got the job. He didn't even fire them niggas. He still kept them around, man. But he took him out of the record label, and then when we came on, man, you know, we wanted to fight any motherfucking body, shoot your ass or whatever. We ain't give a shit, man. And we also had four or five Markmans outside with high-powered rifles that knock your ass down when you come running out of Ruthless after doing some shit. Then they got a phone call, everything running out of Ruthless, lay it down. That's all they would be waiting on. And nobody never knew that, man.
Oh, wow.
They was there, man. They was there for months. They was outside for like a whole year, man. And nobody never knew they was there. So you come to Ruthless fucking around, you might just get dead, man. Shit.
Look, I remember what Mike Coon was saying. In a documentary when he was saying, what was that you were saying about Suge?
You say Mike Klein?
You said Mike Klein?
Yeah, his name is Mike Klein.
Mike Klein, okay, gotcha. Yeah, but Mike was saying when they asked him how to deal with
Suge. He did an interview documentary on, what's his name? Williams, the guy from the L.A. Wrecking Crew. What's his name? You know what I'm talking about.
Lonzo?
He's from that.
Williams?
Huh? Say what?
Lonzo Williams? Was it Lonzo Williams?
Lonzo Williams? Who?
Lonzo.
Yeah, Lonzo Williams, yeah. Mike Klein went on that show and told about stuff at Ruthless and stuff. Lonzo, I even went on Lonzo Williams' show and cleared up a bunch of shit. Mike Klein had me come over there. He asked me a bunch of shit about what was going on and stuff, man. It's about, I don't know, four or five months ago we did that, maybe six. February, I think, is when we did that.
Yeah, I don't think. I don't think people really understood how serious that was to a degree. Did you got, you being the bodyguard and anything, do you sense any form of you guys being in danger?
All the time. Every day I woke up, man, I thought it was my last day living, man. People was dying around us all the time, man, you know. That's just how it was and shit, man. Because Easy, you might not know this, but Easy, he took somebody from death row as well. A badass engineer. He was on the same level as Dr. Dre, but he wasn't no Dr. Dre. You know, ain't nobody no Dr. Dre. And this nigga name was Rhythm D. This nigga, man, he could steal your shit and you wouldn't even know it. He could steal your shit and play it back to you and you wouldn't even know it was your song. I done seen him do it too many times, man. And Eazy-E stole him from Death Row. Had to put security around him because Suge wanted to take him out for leaving.
Oh, man.
So
one thing about
it, bring up Rhythm. It's interesting you bring him up too, because I noticed. It's interesting you bring him up too, because I noticed production-wise, he played a key role in a lot of those later albums, like Easy's.
Rhythm D, man. Yeah, Rhythm D was bad, just like Dr. Dre, but he wasn't on the level of Dr. Dre. But that nigga could hang. You know what I mean? He did a lot of shit on Bone album.
You could tell because Bone's albums was like so sonically advanced, like the sound, it had like the creepy sound behind it. It was something I never even heard before.
Yeah, him and DJ Unique did a hell of a job with that.
Yeah, this nigga Unique, he took a lot of credit for that album, but most of them crazy sounds was coming from a nigga named Tony C. That was Unique's partner, but he the one who was doing all that shit. Them crazy beats and shit. But Unique kind of took the credit for all that shit, though, man.
Now,
but you
one
can't
thing
take
about
nothing
that
from Unique. That nigga do badass beats, though. He a legend, man.
Oh, yeah. Now, to double back a little bit about it, Animal, when you're talking about the Bodyguard tales and how you felt getting up every morning, because we've seen situations with a lot of bodyguards where it went bad. Rest in peace to Banger, you know, Troy Az, bodyguard, you know, Busta Rhymes lost his bodyguard a few years back. What is the most important thing when putting together a security detail that any artist should understand?
Well, man, if you taking your artist somewhere, you need to send somebody there to find out all the exit doors. What can he set close to a exit door in case some shit happens so he can get the fuck out of there really quick? You got to have 4 or 5 niggas with you that you don't know, that don't nobody know that they with you. So that's how I set up busy security. When I go in a place with busy, all you see is me and busy just hanging out. But it's 5 niggas in there with us that you don't know that's with us. And there's 5 more niggas outside. And then so business there, let's get ready. Let's go, Animal. And what I do is I stand up and I flash my flashlight in the air. And niggas just come out of the woodwork and come over where Biz at. And niggas get to looking like, damn, man, we the fuck with Biz. We'd have probably got beat down up in this motherfucker. You damn right you would have. Then we go outside. Now it's 5 more niggas outside waiting on us, man. Busy Bone rolled deep as hell, man. Busy Bone was kind of like, he was kind of like the muscle of Bone Thugs and Harmony. When it was a problem, Busy Bone and his niggas came in and fixed it, and I was one of his niggas. You know what I'm saying? Anybody had a problem acting up, Busy Bone would come in and beat the shit out of them, or have us beat the shit out of them, you know, shit like that. Busy Bone was the muscles of everything back then, man.
So give or take, how many guys did y'all have any given night? How many guys did y'all have any given night?
Well, when Busy go to a club, it'd be about 10 of us. About 10 of us, yeah. Be 6, be 11 with me. Be me and Busy, because Busy like for me and him to hang out. First, we spent about 4 or 5 niggas inside just to splurge like they ain't with us. Tell them don't even hang out. Don't even look at each other. And then me and Busy Bone will come in and sit down and stuff. Busy start ordering hen and whatever, talking to girls. We go to a strip club or a nightclub or whatever, man. And, you know, Busy, you know, he'll buy beer, liquor for everybody in that bitch. The open bar, as long as Busy in there, he, you know, do shit like that. Sometimes niggas get jealous of shit like that, but Busy didn't give a fuck, you know. And so then, you know, motherfuckers get to looking and shit, and I'd be like, shit, Busy, what you want to do? You want to pass some shit up? You know, I'm about it, you know what? And Busy, nah, Big A, let them niggas start it first. You know, like that. And I said, all right, man. Nah, man, let them motherfuckers start that shit first. Y'all didn't like to sound like Busy, did you? I talk just like that motherfucker, man. Sometimes people mistake me for Busy Bone, dog.
So I just like it.
Oh, yeah, man. I clown him all the time and shit, man.
Dude, man, we could tell he was a wild card just by how he set it off at that Versus last year with 3-6.
Yeah, Busybone, like all the motherfuckers I ever bodyguarded for, Busybone was the wildest motherfucker I ever bodyguarded for, man. Yeah, he's the wildest, man. Every morning I knew it was my last day living when I woke up, when I was rolling with that fool. You know, like we getting ready to do a Bone movie next year, 2024. But me and Busybone can do our own movie, man. That's the shit we done good, dog. We can do our own movie. And some people kind of interested in us doing a movie together, man. The shit that me and that dude used to do, man. Yep.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. Along with Bone. Go ahead.
I was gonna say, King, an animal. When you look at today, animal, with a lot of the conflicts that artists have with each other, what does it mean from what you saw to really have issues with somebody, as opposed to where some of these artists just have misunderstandings or disagreements, and then they want to make more out of it than what it is?
Man, it's like this, man. Back in my days, man, you know, people really, you know, they might do a diss song or whatever, but nowadays, man, these young rappers are so jealous of one another, whatever they have, and they're killing each other for their gold and diamonds and shit, man. Back in my day, man, you know, niggas wasn't killing each other for each other's shit, man. They work for their shit. Nah, nigga don't want to work for his shit. He just want to take it from the next nigga, man. And then write a song about it and brag about it. Yo, nigga, I beat you up and took your shit. What you going to do about it? You know, I'm hearing songs like that and shit, man. I'm like, damn, the game done changed so bad, man, you know. And a lot of, and most bodyguards now, they don't really fight like we used to, man. You know, we were strapped back then, but we never really pulled our straps unless we actually had to. Now the first thing a bodyguard do now is pull his strap and want to shoot somebody, man. You know, like, and all these niggas wearing this gold and junk, the diamonds, the jewelry and shit, man. You know, they earn that shit. Why you want to take it from him? It's his shit. Let him shine. He deserves it, you know?
Now, what you said, Animal, about...
Some niggas just got problems with that, man.
Now, what you were saying, Animal, about how, you know, here's the shooting, a lot of times people got to understand that there are procedures, ideally, that you have to go through. We look at what would happen with...
You're breaking up. I didn't hear what you said.
Yeah, he was breaking up a little bit. T-Max, you there?
No, I think he's gone. I just caught the last part.
Yeah, I'm gonna have him call back and let him finish that up. And we getting a lot of good game here tonight, man. You know we.
Hey man, I'm happy to do it for you, man. Oh yeah, man. But you know, I gotta cut it short in a minute, man. I do all the cooking around the house and everybody waiting. I used to start cooking dinner at 7 o'clock. And everybody waiting on me to get dinner going here, man.
All good, man.
I love
all good,
cooking,
man.
That's one of my pastimes. I love to cook.
Yeah, that's another survival trait that you men, for all the guys that listen to the show, that's a survival trait that you have to have.
Yeah.
Because can't eat out every day.
No,
you know
you can't. I'm gonna tell you some crazy shit that Busybone used to do, man. We'll be riding around in Beverly Hills. You know how they sit outside and be eating it and shit at restaurants and shit?
Yeah.
Busybone, when the limo stopped, Busy would get out of the limo and go take food off of people's plates and get back in the limo, man. And I got to get out and deal with that shit. Sometimes people get mad.
Lord.
Sometimes people recognize him. Sometimes people laugh. Then I just pay for their whole food and shit. Like, here, man, take this shit, man. Sorry, man. I would make up some shit. He been arguing with his girl. He mad right now and shit. So don't worry about it. Busy was bad about that shit, man.
Believe it or not, man, a movie on Busy alone would be a draw because he has a wild story.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
And that's no disrespect to the other members because they're a part of that story as well.
Oh,
no,
I know that.
Story
man.
Of bones.
See, we had like four more songs to do before me and Busy left the tour. Mary J. Blige was opening up for us. And we had four more songs to go. No, four more shows to go before the tour was over. And we took off back to Columbus. And they was looking for us. And then we loaded up from Columbus and went to Nashville. And that's where Busy Bone did his first album at in Nashville.
Mm.
This fool named Kenny G. What's his name? Kenny G or something like that. He did the beat for When Thugs Cry. That guy. Somebody told me he got murdered,
though.
Yeah, When Thugs Cry. Somebody told me that guy got murdered that did that beat.
Oh, man. Rest in peace to that brother, man, if that's the case.
Yeah.
Thugs Cry was a classic.
Name was, I think his name was Kenny G. I think that was his name, Kenny G, I think. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm going to look that up,
He had a beautiful wife, though. Yeah.
I'm definitely gonna look that up, man. But it's good to know that you know that Easy still have people around that want to give him his flowers, and you repping his name.
Oh
right.
Yeah, I'm gonna always be one of them, man. I'm always, you know, like I'm gonna say this too before I go, man. If they did Straight out of Compton, right? Me and you wouldn't even be talking. I wouldn't even have nothing to say. How could I say anything if you did it right? But I watch Perry Mason all the time. Shit, man, you know, you didn't come with the facts and clues and everything is argumentative, and you didn't stick to the facts, man. So therefore, now I have the right to tell my story now because you didn't tell the correct story. So you opened it. So you opened the door for me to tell my story now. So that's why I do interviews. That's why I talk shit. But I don't, you know, call nobody. Only people name I call is like I call Busy Bone name, the Bone Niggas name, but it ain't nothing bad. And I would call Dr. Dre name, and I would call Suge name. But anybody else, if I say something about, you know, I don't call nobody name or nothing, you know. I don't throw nobody's ass under the bus. I just leave it. You know the story, you know who the fuck I'm talking about. You know, I leave it like that, you know.
Right.
Yeah. Because you don't want to be known as a snitch. That's a bad thing. I'd rather be dead than known as a snitch.
Well,
but anyway,
rules,
man, I got
these niggas
get the dinner going, man. Don't look like your boy T-Mac coming back.
I think he up there now. You there?
No, I'm right here.
Oh, you there?
Right here.
Oh, okay, I didn't know you was
yeah,
back,
here.
Man. Well, hey, man,
yeah,
you going to have to invite
out
me
on
back,
me.
Man. I got to go in here and get dinner going, man. Everybody waiting on dinner and shit. I usually start cooking about 7, man.
Animal, this has been an honor, and we thank you so much for your time and for the stories. You're welcome back anytime, and we definitely
yeah,
got to get
man,
some more from
can,
you, man.
You know,
thank
I
you.
Come back next week or the week after and ask me some more questions, and I'll try to put some light on it and shit, man, you know, for you because, you know, like I said, man, if it wasn't for Straight Outta Compton, was done right, I wouldn't have shit to say. What could I say? He told the truth. All I can do is just sit back and like, yep, it happened like that. Yep, that's true. But it ain't like that, man. The only thing that I like about Straight Outta Compton is when Ice Cube did No Vaseline. Man, that's the best diss song in the world besides I 100 Bars and Running, man. No. What is 100 Bars and Running? The game deal is 1,000
300 bars.
300 bars. 300 bars, yeah. That and No Vaseline, them the baddest diss songs ever made, man. Yeah, man. Yeah.
But we definitely appreciate you,
through.
Man. We definitely big shout out to Angie
yeah, you
for
too,
making
man.
This happen.
You know, and, okay, man, you know, just let me know when you want to invite me back. Just let Mar J know, man, and I call back and we'll talk some more shit, man.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Okay, man. So I got to get here and get this dinner going, man. So you guys have a great day. It was nice chatting with you, and we'll chat again.
Man, God bless.
And I always say this when I get ready to leave a show. I always say this right here. I'm going to keep the wind at my back and keep facing the sun. For me, there is no 911. So now you can hang me.
Amen.
Yeah.
Amen.
All right, man.
On that note, y'all, we out.
All right, man. Later.
Later.